Alright, ladies! Up!
This is Jason Albert, and you are listening to the Faster Skeeter Podcast. So it's been a busy week on the anti-doping front. In this wide-ranging podcast episode, we'll touch a bit on the McLaren report, just to get the basics. And then we'll hear from an athlete press conference held the same day the McLaren report went public. As a Nordic sports fan, something IOC Athletes Commission rep Adam Pengilly said in response to a question from a reporter during that press conference caught my attention.
And you said that's also not only for this Games, but also for Pyeongchang?
The email that we sent out said if the allegations are true, we, the IOC Athletes Commission, believe that the Russian team shouldn't be at the next two games, somewhere around winter, and there was strong support for that.
So just to clarify the what and the how regarding the possibility of a Winter Olympic ban, we called Faster Skier editor-at-large and Zurich, Switzerland resident Chelsea Little. But before we get to that, there was this.
Welcome to the McLaren Independent Commission News Conference here in Toronto.
That's how Monday morning, July 18th, began for clean sport stakeholders and alleged Russian cheaters, with the voice of press conference MC Catherine Doyle, introducing the investigator of the hour, Richard McLaren, and his mandate.
In May, Professor McLaren was mandated by the World Anti-Doping Agency to lead a multidisciplinary team charged with determining the facts with respect to the allegations of manipulation of doping control samples and other allegations made by Dr. Grigory Vodchenkov, the former director of the WADA-accredited Moscow laboratory.
As far as press conferences go, it was riveting stuff. Here's a McLaren clip where he describes something all of us were schooled in.
The disappearing positive methodology.
It was like something out of a 007 sports-themed thriller, and we heard about it again and again.
The Moscow lab's disappearing positive methodology, as we've dubbed it, was the state's fail-safe strategy.
A strategy to prevent Russia's doped athletes from testing positive and being sanctioned. In Sochi, things got mildly complicated for the FSB, the modern-day equivalent of the infamous KGB. There was a secret door where positives were swapped for negatives, and even a bigger hurdle to jump.
The main issue to overcome was the tamper-evident caps of the sample bottles.
Where there's a will, there's a way. Simply put, it was a pretty effective methodology.
As a result, there were no positive samples at the Sochi Games for Russian athletes. Now, my investigative team's forensic evidence establishes beyond a reasonable doubt that some method was used to replace positive dirty samples during the Sochi Games.
And let's just say that with a podium sweep in the men's 50K skate in Sochi, it was a successful Games for the home team. But McLaren spoiled that success with three succinct findings you'll hear about over the next minute and a half.
Our commission of investigation uncovered the following. First, the Moscow laboratory operated for the protection of doped Russian athletes within a state-directed fail-safe system, which we describe in the report as the disappearing positive methodology. Second, the Sochi laboratory operated a unique sample swapping methodology to enable doped Russian athletes to compete at the Winter Olympic Games. Third, the Russian Ministry of Sport directed, controlled, and oversaw the manipulation of athletes' analytical results or sample swapping and the active participation and assistance of the FSB, CSB, and both Moscow and Sochi laboratories. For those of you who may not know, the FSB is the Russian Federal Security Service, formerly known as the KGB, and the CSP is the Center of Sports Preparation of National Teams of Russia. And those two bodies were directly involved in the state-directed control and oversight and manipulation of athletes' analytical results.
And McLaren wasn't done. The investigation implicated pretty much every Olympic sport, summer and winter.
I also want to emphasize from those three key findings that Russian athletes competing in a wide range of disciplines were involved.
So without going into all the details, you can get those by reading the McLaren report. The day was only beginning for some. In the end, it's fair to say it's about the athletes, clean athletes, and how to turn a corner. That brings us to this. By early Monday evening, a panel of athletes' representatives to both WADA and the IOC held a media teleconference to go on record with their thoughts about the McLaren report. Becky Scott, Olympic cross-country ski medalist and WADA Athlete Committee Chair, was up first. But before we get to her, here's some background. On July 16th, 2 days before the McLaren report was publicly released, it seems Scott sent an email to select anti-doping entities, seeking signatures for an attachment. That attachment in question was a letter from both the Canadian and U.S. anti-doping agencies asking the president of the IOC to implement a wholesale Russian ban from the upcoming Rio Games. That email got Scott some pushback. Here's a quote from a July 16th press release from European Olympic Committee's president, Patrick Healy. Okay, again, this is a quote that I'm about to read. Firstly, the McLaren report is meant to be a totally independent report that must remain totally confidential until its publication on Monday, 18 July 2016 at 9 in Canada. It is clear from the email and letter that both the independence and the confidentiality of the report have been compromised. And Healy goes on. My concern is that there seems to have been an attempt to agree to an outcome before any evidence has been presented. So it's safe to say that Scott felt like she had some concerns. She opened with the statement, defending herself from any impropriety.
Well, hello, everyone. I just wanted to front end this media conference call with a little statement to address the events of the last 48 hours, as I did not get a chance to do that yet. So I was extremely disturbed to read the remarks in the press by senior sport officials insinuating that I had, as the chair of the athlete committee, acted inappropriately or somehow interfered with the McLaren Commission and its report. These suggestions were made without any attempt to contact me, nor to actually understand what had happened. And for the record, I did not see the McLaren report before today. So just to clarify, I had received a draft statement which had been prepared by a number of major national anti-doping agencies who felt that the athletes of the WADA Athletes Committee might benefit from seeing their ideas before we met and prepared our response to the recommendations made by Professor McLaren. As a matter of following routine process, and in my capacity as chair, I circulated that draft by email to all members of my committee, as I do with any requests or thoughts that come my way for the committee. This was circulated to nobody else, and nothing else was done. And so to imply somehow that I breached process or confidentiality or anything else is false and actually quite outrageous. So just wanted to set the record straight on what had happened in the last 48 hours, and I think we can move on now to the findings of the McLaren report today and the athlete response and take some questions.
She followed with her reactions to the McLaren report.
We felt a little bit vindicated today because we had been calling for this report since last year, since last November, when the first allegations and evidence of doping in Russia surfaced in track and field and that report had come out. So nevertheless, I think today's results for us were really shocking. You know, we as a committee were very upset to read about the unprecedented levels of doping and the subversion and undermining of Olympic values that was taking place in Russia. We fully support every recommendation that came forth today by the WADA Exco to the international sporting community, and we really hope that these recommendations are acted on with the highest intent and the greatest efforts to ensure that the playing field is level and that clean athletes and their rights are protected. So I think that's more or less what we wanted to express today on the results of the report. You know, I think that we we have always and will continue to stand with the clean athletes of the world and really feel that today has been an important day.
Ben Sanford, a member of the WADA Athlete Committee, was blunt about his support for WADA's recommendation that Russia receive a total Rio ban.
And I think that's the best way to move forward and to protect clean athletes and to ensure the integrity of sport is to make sure that if you are caught doping or subverting the system, that there are consequences for that.
The UK's Adam Pengilly, a member of the IOC's Athletes Commission, urged Thomas Bach, the current IOC president, to reform.
His Agenda 2020 roadmap was all about sustainability, credibility, and youth. They were the three pillars. And if we're going to be sustainable as an Olympic movement, we have to take tough stances on doping, and that doesn't just mean on athletes, it means across the board and beyond. It means to be credible, we have to do that as well. Otherwise, young people won't watch television or won't watch sport, won't get involved, because they won't believe what they see is the truth, the reality. They'll think it's just all about doping, and parents also won't get kids involved.
In her opening statement, Haley Wickenheiser from Canada, and also on the IOC's Athletes Commission, took a moment to thank Becky Scott personally.
I'd like to also just say a big thank you, show of appreciation to Becky. I don't think people realize the amount of personal toll and strain this has taken on many of the athletes that have stood up and fought the big machine, so to speak. Takes a lot of courage, and doing this for the clean athletes of the world. So to Becky and the WADA Athletes Commission, just big kudos to you guys. A lot of vindication today, and I completely agree with the WADA recommendations going forward.
The group eventually took questions. Scott was asked right off how she felt competing against dope skiers in the 2002 Salt Lake Games. Scott initially came in third behind two Russian skiers who were ultimately nailed for doping. 2.5 years later, she was awarded the gold.
I think that was a long time ago, and I lived that experience. You know, obviously, it was very personal to be, first to win an Olympic medal and then go through the experience that I did. It's definitely shaped my interest in anti-doping and probably fueled my passion for the clean sport, even though it was already in existence and it was already there. I think, fast forwarding to today, though, I just feel a very strong sense of accountability, I think, to clean athletes around the world, because I know what it's like for them, and I've been there. And I understand the sacrifices and the hard work and the tremendous amount of dedication and commitment it takes to become a high-level athlete and to be able to go to the Olympic Games. And I want to see every athlete putting in those efforts given the same chance and equal opportunity. And I think that's where my passion for this comes from still today.
Bonnie Ford from ESPN.com asked about Russian non-dopers.
Same issue being raised as was raised after the IAAF ban of the Russian Athletic Federation, which is, what about the rights of quote-unquote clean Russian athletes? And I just wanted to ask how you balance that in your statement and advocacy for a total ban.
WADA Athlete Commission rep Ben Sanford spoke up.
Hi. Yeah, it's a good question. And obviously we're the WADA Athlete Committee and we stand behind clean athletes. And I think one thing that really needs to be talked about is how this system that's been implemented in Russia has probably affected clean athletes in Russia. Like what we heard today was that in many situations, if you weren't doping in Russia, you weren't getting the coaches, you weren't getting put in national teams. And I think that's we can look in from the outside, but I think internally within Russia, it's also a really, large negative. If you wanted to be a clean athlete in Russia, in many situations, you've probably not been able to compete. And one of the things that today's report does sort of emphasizes how all-encompassing the doping system and the subversion of results was, and that it wasn't just one or two sports. It was sports across the board. It was athletes across the board. Like, some of the numbers are remarkable. And I think to probably answer your question more specifically, I think the scale of what was happening requires that all of Russia is banned from the Olympics and the Paralympics. And it's when you have a state-sponsored system which is running a doping program and then also subverting the results, that's enormous. And I think Russia has to look at themselves, and they're the ones to blame for the situation. They created this program, and they should have to live with the consequences.
Then Adam Pengilly was asked what the stakes were for the Olympic movement if the IOC ignored WADA's recommendation for a total ban. Here's Pengilly.
Well, I think I'm not the person to decide on our credibility. I think the world at large will look at us. The IOC are regarded as the kind of custodians of the Olympic movement and hold a leadership position therein. And so, as difficult as it is, by not enacting the recommendation from WADA, we risk very much reducing the credibility of the movement, of the organization, and of Olympic sport.
Matt Futterman, a journalist for the Wall Street Journal, asked if the athletes were rallying other groups to their cause. Adam Pengilly's response to Futterman should have shaken and stirred Russia's non-compliant winter sports athletes.
Matt, could I just add something?
Yeah, sure thing, Adam.
On your first question, several weeks ago, the IOC's Athlete Commission sent out, had discussions internally, and then sent out an email to athlete commissions from international federations and from continental Olympic committees, asking if for their support for a position that we took. And it was on anti-doping issues, and there were four different points, but the final point being that if the allegations are to be are proven, and if they turn out to be true from Sochi and the New York Times article and 60 Minutes, then the Russian team should not be at the Olympic Games, both in Rio and in Pyeongchang. And that was supported by over 20 IF and Continental Athlete Commission chairs, some of whom spoke. It was a very short turnaround, and some of them spoke with their whole commission, some of them with just a few members. But there was support very broadly from across a large number of athlete commission chairs. So I don't think it's something that's been taken lightly, and it's not something that's been taken without thoughts of commissions and athletes beyond our group.
Here's Futterman to clarify.
And you said that's also not only for this games, but also for Pyeongchang?
The email that we sent out said if the allegations are true, we, the IOC Athletes Commission, believe that the Russian team shouldn't be at the next two games, some around winter. And there was strong support for that from, as I say, over 20 IF and Continental AC chairs.
So surely more to come in this ever-changing narrative. For Scott, WADA, the IOC, and FIS, the International Governing Body for Alpine and Nordic Sports. As of Thursday morning, the Court for Arbitration in Sport upheld the banning of Russia's track and field team for Rio.
Hello.
Hey, Chelsea, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. First off, actually, can I get you to introduce yourself? What do you do, and where are you based?
So I'm Chelsea Little. I'm the editor at large for Faster Skier, and I'm based in Zurich, Switzerland, where I'm also a PhD student in ecology.
Can you speak a little bit to what the process might be to implement a Winter Olympic ban and why that may take some time?
Yeah, so I think the process is quite unclear at this point and depends a lot on the outcomes of some decisions that will be made in the next week or two in relation to the Rio Games. But maybe to sort of go over the process there and why people might be pushing for this and then how it's being managed in terms of a decision. Of course, you know, one thing to remember is that the McLaren report included allegations about all sports, but this part about Sochi and the infiltration of the anti-doping lab was really the only accusation that Russia had been directly involved with manipulating doping control at an Olympic Games. And that was, of course, a Winter Olympic Games. And so the reaction is coming now before the Rio Games, but that doesn't necessarily represent justice in the eyes of winter sports athletes to then see summer sports athletes be banned from the Olympics, whereas they, I think, justifiably are asking, you know, what about us? We were the ones at the Olympics where that lab was manipulating the results. And so if Russia is punished with a ban in Rio, and then the world maybe loses interest because there's no ongoing investigation and new breaking news, or maybe they just feel like Russia has done their penance, it's possible that there wouldn't be a ban in the next Olympics. And I think that would leave a lot of winter athletes feeling like they've, you know, missed their chance for justice. So that's why they would be advocating for a ban over not just one Olympics, but two Olympics. Whether that's feasible, I think, is still a pretty open question in terms of a sort of Russia-wide ban. The Court of Arbitration for Sport did uphold the ban on Russian track and field athletes, but that was based on much more specific information about team officials, coaches, and doctors providing performance-enhancing drugs to athletes. And in the McLaren report, it's not so much about team officials as about government officials. So it's harder to pin down whether athletes in an individual sport either were doping aside from those many tests that they were covered up. But, you know, that cover up could have been independent of the respective Russian sports federation. For instance, I'll just say, for instance, here, the Russian Ski Federation. I mean, if you think about it logically, it's possible that those athletes were doping, not on the orders of the Ski Federation, but then when a test was discovered, it was covered up by the Ministry of Sport and that anti-doping laboratory. It's also possible that the Ski Federation could have been involved. We don't know. That's not really in the report. But anyway, a ban on all athletes at the Olympics is quite a different question than the question that Cass has already addressed about the track and field athletes, where there's these very specific allegations about that federation and the people working in that federation. So I think people have an idea of whether a Russia-wide ban should be applied or not, but we really don't know. There's no precedent for that happening in a doping-related case, and we'll just have to see what happens legally. And that's, I think, why even though athletes are advocating for a ban continuing through the Winter Olympics, there hasn't been a lot of comment on it, just because, you know, the precedent that's set at these Rio Olympics will go a really long way towards determining whether that's even a question that can be asked. In her interview with Alex on this site, Sarah Lewis from the International Ski Federation, you know, reiterated that it's not such an urgent issue for the winter federations as it is for the summer federations. And I think they will be meeting in August, all of the winter federations, to try to come up with some sort of plan for addressing the positive cases. And then one just last thing I'd say is that, you know, aside from the athlete reps, there have been quite a few athletes who want to see their international federations in winter sports responding in a strong and official way, which is something we haven't seen. I know FIS and the IBU, the biathlon union, neither of them have released any sort of official statement about the McLaren report. And athletes have been asking for it. You know, Martin Fourcade was on Twitter asking for it. Lowell Bailey was very vocal on Twitter, as well as in an interview with Gabby on our site. Tim Burke was very vocal on Twitter asking, why are we only talking about a ban at the Summer Olympics? Rosanna Crawford from Canada was on Twitter asking what she could do. And then for cross-country skiing, French athletes Maurice Magnificat and Robin Duviard were just interviewed in Ski Chrono, and they were basically asking for action from FIS, and FIS hasn't put out any sort of press release or official statement about that.
So one name I don't think you mentioned, but I think he was quoted this morning in a New York Times article, is Max Cobb from USA Biathlon. And, you know, he's been a proponent for clean sport and from a national federation standpoint, fairly outspoken. What do you think his moves will be?
You know, I think that, as you mentioned, Max is extremely dedicated to clean sport, and he's done some calculus in his head that for him, it's worthwhile to be very outspoken. He doesn't see it as a risk to himself or to the U.S. Federation, whereas I think a lot of people in his position do think about whether there will be political consequences of speaking out. And Max has just thrown that to the wind and is very assertive. And so I think he will continue trying to speak to as much media as he can, not only here in the ski world, but he's great about talking to national and international media. And I think he also does a lot behind the scenes to work with athletes and others who are also proponents of clean sport. He's a real leader in that regard.
Okay. Anything else? Or I don't know if there's something from your notes that you wanted to talk about.
Yeah, I guess maybe one other thing I would say is, in her interview with Alex, Sarah Lewis began to describe sort of what process there might be in dealing with the names of the people whose tests were hidden by the Russian anti-doping lab. And it wasn't really clear what that would entail. You know, she said that results management would have to be handled in a way that was in accordance with the WADA code, which seems obvious. I would certainly hope that it would be handled that way. But, you know, what kind of evidence do they have? What kind of bans could they hand out? When might that happen? Those are all things that are very much up in the air. And I think since nobody has seen the list of names yet, and that's something that people are really asking for, in that interview with Ski Chrono, Robin Duviard said basically, I'd really like to see those names come out. Why aren't these coming out? So I think people are maybe afraid that some of this will be swept under the rug and they won't have detailed answers to their questions about, you know, what really happened in that race that I was in. And given that FIS just had a doping case with Sundby where they basically didn't publicize anything for a year and a half, I think that probably will also affect people's confidence. And so given that, where, you know, we're unsure what will happen in individual cases, I think that's maybe a greater reason for people who are winter sports athletes to be pushing for a Winter Olympic ban as well, because that's something they could see as justice, where they're uncertain about the other outcomes in this case.
Here's a question, and I talked to a few people about this, you know, and you're close to the home of FIS and also just the entities that the federations that control winter sport. Why is there this slow churn of the gears in terms of disclosing doping findings and so forth? I mean, I know there's a legal process. So that's one question. And the other piece is, why do you think they didn't release any of the names? I mean, was that specifically, you know, not part of the McLaren mandate? Or is there still, is it just such a Byzantine process that that's a whole nother level of peeling back, you know, the layers of the onion, so to speak?
Those are both great questions. So maybe first to talk about the international federations, it's really hard to make generalizations. You know, I follow closely two winter sport federations, FIS and the IBU, and I would say that they do things completely differently. I'm sure that they both handle results in the way that is required by the WADA code, but how that translates to transparency and communication to the public is just very, very different. And so that's actually been something that's really fascinating to me. The IBU, as far as I can tell, always releases when there has been a positive A sample test. It may take a few weeks, maybe, but it comes. Whereas with FIS, that does not happen, I don't think. And it's hard for me to tell why. I think they have some ideas about what constitutes a positive test. Like, they didn't report this Simpy case as a positive test because they didn't consider it a positive test for whatever their reasons were. But yeah, that decision-making seems to happen differently in different federations. And again, if I followed more sports more closely, I guess I would be able to say which one of those sets of behaviors was more the norm. But with a sample size of two, it's really hard to make any generalizations. But and the results management process is, you know, it has many steps that have to be followed in order. You have to notify the athletes, and there can be some lag times in terms of communication between athletes and the federations. That can be why it's slow sometimes. But again, I think there are differing standards of transparency. And I think part of that comes down to what image they're trying to present with their anti-doping efforts, whether they're trying to present, look, we're doing well because we're catching people, or whether they're trying to present, you know, look, we're doing well, nobody is doping. But that's just my interpretation. I wouldn't want to put words into their mouths. But to get at the McLaren report, I guess that the reason there's no names is possibly for those same reasons in terms of results management. I think that the athletes and the national federations are supposed to be notified before the names are made public. I'm not like certain on that. I haven't read the whole detailed requirements, but I would imagine the reason that they avoided releasing the names was so that any actual anti-doping cases could then proceed according to the standard procedure. Because usually when we first hear a name, if it's very early in the process, it's because it's been leaked by somebody. It's not usually from the International Federation if it's early in the process.
Okay, well, thanks again, Chelsea. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome. Have a good afternoon.
All right, you too. Bye-bye. Thanks for listening to the Faster Scooter Podcast.